iHeart Podcasts.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So in prep for this week's episode, I was reading about this hotel in Ireland. It's called Ashford Castle. And the big draw there is that there's an owl called Dingle, Mango. Does it make you want to stay there?
I love the idea of a hotel owl. I feel like I need to hear more.
Okay, well, apparently the hotel has this falconry school, so here's even more reason to go there. It's on the grounds right there, and the guests can take classes there with, you know, you work with all kinds of birds when you do this.
Sure.
But Dingle is, of course, the star, to be clear. There are other birds there, but Dingle is the star. I'm just going to keep saying Dingle. And this is partially because he has a specialty. So if you're looking to get the proposal package there, they set you up with this nice, cozy dinner by candlelight. And at the end of the dinner, Dingle will swoop in and deliver your ring. How cool is this?
I feel like that's the most Harry Potter proposal I've ever heard.
It's so awesome. But, you know, this also made us wonder about hotels and all of the secrets around hotels, the little gimmicks hotels use to get guests in the door, and the tricks and codes that hotel employees use, and, of course, this mysterious society that so many top concierges belong to. So let's dig in. Hey there, podcast listeners. Welcome to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will Pearson, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend Mangesh Hattikader. And on the other side of the soundproof glass, showing off his vast collection of ill-gotten hotel amenities, this is one of his stranger collections. That's our friend and producer, Tristan McNeil. And, you know, this is one of those times I do wish our listeners could see this, because every single inch of Tristan's desk, and I mean every single inch, is just packed with tiny bottles of shampoo and conditioner and lotions, and I actually don't think I've ever seen so many slightly different shades of beige and light green
light
in my
brown,
life.
It's
kind of like the world's most boring rainbow, if you look at it.
So I don't even want to know what he has planned for all of those. But you know one thing you won't find in Tristan's collection, and that's toothpaste. And that's because hotels in the U.S. don't typically provide complimentary toothpaste like they do for soap or shampoo and all those other bathroom staples.
You know, I've noticed that there have been a couple of times where I've forgotten toothpaste and gone downstairs, and they've given me the world's smallest. Yeah, they're like, this should do the trick. Or the world's smallest tube of toothpaste.
Yeah.
Have you ever had this happen?
Yeah, like, super tiny.
Smaller than like the tip of your finger. It's so strange. But I'd actually heard that hotels choose which amenities to offer based on market research. And you would think and hope that there would be a strong market for dental hygiene. But apparently most people aren't asking for toothpaste in their rooms, so hotels just don't bother stocking it.
Yeah, so I'd always figured that it was just because most people brought their own, but it turns out there's actually a more practical reason that hotels don't do this as well. Apparently, toothpaste is more strictly regulated in the U.S. than things like shampoo or soap, and in fact, toothpaste is actually classified as a cosmetic and a drug, since it usually contains fluoride, and the stricter regulations put on drug manufacturing means that toothpaste can cost, I don't know, like 30% or even more than other hygiene essentials. So, you know, that's probably another reason why most hotels don't provide it.
Okay. I actually never knew that, but that's exactly why we're doing this episode because, you know, although the vast majority of us have stayed in a hotel at one time or another, the two of us within the past week, actually, most of us, you know, we know very little about how a hotel actually runs. And that's partly because our culture has long since embraced the thinking of one of the hotel industry's pioneers, and that was Caesar Ritz. Now, the Swiss hotelier famously claimed that, quote, people like to be served, but invisibly. And so for the last 150 years, society's pretty much stuck to that maxim, and that's, you know, for better or worse. But so today, we're going to peek behind the front desk and kind of pull back that disposable shower curtain to reveal some of the best-kept secrets of hotels and their employees. We'll, of course, uncover the do's and don'ts of things like room service, as well as some of the weirdest requests ever fielded by a hotel concierge. Plus, we'll get a better sense of the burdens of a hotel housekeeper and why you probably shouldn't use the glass cups in your hotel room. So where do you want to start, Mango?
So I think before we get into the secrets, we should lay out a few basic facts about just how massive the hotel workforce truly is. So for starters, there are about 55,000 hotel properties in the U.S., which amounts to more than 5 million guest rooms in total. And over 1 billion people stay in a hotel for at least one night each year, which is about 15% of the world's population. And to service all of these guests and the rooms they occupy, hotels employ about 4.5 million people in the U.S. alone. So this includes things like desk clerks, hotel managers, housekeepers, bellboys. It takes a staggering amount of manpower to keep even like a single hotel running smoothly. And according to the American Hotel and Lodging Association, which is where all these stats actually come from, a typical hotel with 100 occupied rooms per night supports over 250 local jobs every year.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, since hotels are such big employers, I think maybe the way we want to approach this is just kind of do a roll-by-roll dirt dishing on, you know, each one of these, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, I like that idea. So why don't we start with the front desk and this practice of walking a guest. And this is when a hotel turns away a guest with a standing reservation because the hotel has mistakenly overbooked themselves. But the truth is that overbooking is rarely done by mistake. So the average no-show rate for a hotel reservation is around 10% each day. And hotels try to book themselves to 110% capacity whenever possible to account for these expected cancellations. And the hope is that the numbers will balance out and that every head will have a bed for the night. It's what hoteliers call a perfect sell. But the trouble is that sometimes too many people actually show up for the rooms they booked, and this is when someone gets walked.
So this is somewhat similar to like when the airlines overbook flights and they're looking for volunteers and all that. But you said when somebody gets walked. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, you know, the practice varies by hotel, but typically the desk agent will book the guest one night stay at a nearby hotel, usually on the company's dime. But again, it depends on the hotel.
All right. So how do hotels choose who to walk? Like, is it based on how long you're staying or something else or what?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few different considerations. So length of stay is one. So, for example, like you're more likely to get walked if you're staying for just one night. Another consideration is whether or not you've stayed in the hotel before and how likely you seem to come back. And obviously, if you were rude to the staff or maybe even short-tempered with a loved one in front of the staff, you probably upped your chances of getting walked. But honestly, the biggest determining factor of who gets bumped is how much they're paying for their room. So hotel prices fluctuate a lot based on demand, but the rooms that make hotels the least profit are all the ones booked on discount sites like Expedia or Priceline. And these sites all take commission for helping to fill a hotel's rooms, typically anywhere from 10 to 25%. So obviously a hotel would prioritize a customer who booked with them directly since that person's paying the full rate. So if you booked on a discount site and the hotel is full when you get there, you might want to prepare to take a walk.
Yeah, I've actually read how hotels usually set aside their worst rooms for those discount sites, too, which is a little bit scary because I tend to use those sites at the same time. But, like, I'm one of those gold star members because I do it enough, so I guess that means I get the top of the line, dirtiest, nastiest room. But anyway, apparently the thinking is that those customers are in it more for the value than they are the experience, so why not keep the best rooms for those who choose the hotel at full price, right?
I mean, it definitely makes sense from a business standpoint, but it is kind of ironic that sites like Priceline have become such a thorn in the hotel industry side. Because if you remember, hotels actually helped create those discount sites way back in the early 2000s. At the time, the hotel industry was in a serious decline. This was post-September 11. So, you know, owners decided to roll the dice on a different way to sell more rooms. And all kinds of hotels started giving their inventory to these discount sites. And little by little, the industry sort of picked itself up again. And now that hotels are doing so well, they probably wish they could ditch the discount sites entirely. But of course, customers wouldn't stand for that. And with things like Airbnb and other rental platforms rising, you know, hotels are even less likely to shake things up.
Yeah, you're probably right. But since we're talking about hotel financials, actually, here was a fact that I stumbled across. Did you know that the average operational cost for a hotel room is only between $30 and $40 a day? Now, that includes everything from the water being used, electricity, laundry, cleaning supplies, even the hourly wages of housekeepers and other employees who help keep the room operating. So deduct about $30 from whatever you're paying for the hotel room, and you can see why the industry became profitable again so quickly.
That's really interesting. You know, to get us back to the front desk, though, I do want to warn you about another secret way that hotel desk clerks can get even with inconsiderate guests. And thankfully, this one has some hotel slang associated with it as well. Have you ever heard of a key bomb?
I can't say that I have. It sounds a little bit scary. So what is it?
So, you know the key cards that most hotels use for their rooms these days?
Right.
Well, whenever a guest checks in, they're given what's called an initial key. And this is a key that's been programmed to reset the door lock the first time it's inserted so that no other previous keys will work anymore. And most hotels will give you two or more room keys, but only one of them is often an initial key. At least that's how it's supposed to go. But if you cross a desk agent or act like a jerk to your family in front of one, it's possible that they'll slip you a key bomb as punishment. And this is basically a second initial key. So once it gets used, the first key gets deactivated, and whoever's stuck with it will be locked out the next time they try to use it. And since most people will keep that first key for themselves and then give the other key to, like, a spouse or a child, the key bomb generally hits the person it's intended for.
Ouch. You know, actually, I came across another good low-key revenge plot, and this one's especially popular among desk clerks in New York City hotels. So you know how 212 is one of the oldest and maybe even the most common area code in the New York City area? Mm-hmm. Well, if you ever find yourself staying in room 1212 or 1212 at a New York hotel, you might just be the victim of a passive-aggressive hotel worker. And that's because hotel management knows that guests often forget to dial 9 when they're trying to call outside of a hotel. So whoever ends up in room 1212 is doomed to get phone calls all night from confused guests dialing 1212. It's pretty great, huh?
That is pretty great. So let's switch gears for a second, because there's another secretive aspect of hotels that involves the front desk crew, and that's room service. So back in the 1930s, the Waldorf Astoria became the first hotel to deliver meals directly to its rooms. And for decades afterwards, this amenity was seen as almost a luxury, and one that was only found in, like, 5-star hotels. But nowadays, plenty of standard hotels are getting in on the action as well. In fact, around 22% of all hotels in the country now offer some type of room service.
Really? That many? All right, so what should we keep in mind when placing an order?
So, for starters, you have to consider which floor you're on before you make that call. So, earlier this year, Mental Floss spoke with a hospitality specialist known simply as Matt.
Matt.
Yeah. Well, he's been in the industry for 10 years. He's a veteran and worked at luxury hotels. And according to him, the higher your floor, the soggier your food is going to be when it finally gets there. And this is actually because of those big metal lids that hotels use to cover your food order.
Yeah.
So the lids are great for retaining heat and keeping out germs, but the longer they have to travel, the more steam builds up inside them. So unless you like your toast really wet or your fries super soggy, it's probably best to skip the crispy stuff if you're on a higher floor.
Well, I mean, wet toast is probably one of my all-time favorites, so I feel like I'm okay here, but that's interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, the metal lids can actually result in another problem. Because the lids trap that heat, they basically continue cooking your food during the trip up to your room. So, according to Matt, if you order a steak medium, it'll probably be medium well by the time it gets to you, if not even more cooked. So his advice is to avoid steak and seafood altogether and just opt for the things that are tough to mess up, like salads or club sandwiches.
Well, and you even see in hotels where sometimes those are the only items offered after a certain hour. And apparently that's to avoid having to keep an overnight chef on staff. And so instead, the day crew just preps a bunch of salads and sandwiches that they'll sell, you know, until the next day comes.
Which makes sense. You know, another thing that most people don't know is that a lot of hotels now outsource their room service to local restaurants. So if you look closely at the menu, it might say that the food is proudly presented by the hotel, but it actually comes from a place down the street. And obviously, this is another cost-cutting measure for the hotel, but it's also one that most people don't mind or even notice in most cases.
You know, I think I'd actually prefer knowing that the food I was eating was not prepared in the hotel kitchen, just from a place down the street, like a good restaurant nearby. That sounds like a smart plan.
Yeah, I mean, I can't blame you. And hotels don't have a great reputation for being especially clean. In fact, according to the NSF, the average hotel room is dirtier than a typical home, an airplane, and even a school. And that's despite having an army of housekeepers just working around the clock to keep things tidy.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk about and kind of gross. But what do you say we take a closer look at hotel housekeeping and see what sorts of secrets we can turn up?
Yeah, but first let's take a quick break.
You're listening to Part-Time Genius, and we're talking about the secret world of hotel operations. All right, Mango, so before we talk housekeeping, I do want to quickly mention two room features that hotel designers pay extra careful attention to. Now, that would be the headboard and the bed sheets. Now, this is actually something I never would have guessed, but according to industry experts, I don't know if it was Matt or whomever, there's a good chunk of a hotel's room budget that goes to an impressive-looking headboard for the beds. And if you think about it, that's because the headboard is really one of the first things that a guest sees when they walk into a room. And so The trick actually works especially well in budget hotels because a fancy headboard also has the effect of pulling attention away from the rest of the furniture in the room, which was probably way cheaper than whatever they spent on that breathtaking headboard.
I mean, I feel like that's like me as a kid. I'd always make my bed because it distracts from like all the dirtiness elsewhere. But what about the bed sheets? So what's the secret there?
Well, unfortunately, there are probably all kinds of secrets lurking in these hotel bed sheets, but the one I'm talking about specifically in this case is the thread count, or the number of horizontal and vertical threads per square inch of fabric. Because hotel guests typically judge their overall experience by how well they slept, and so some hotels hedge their bets by springing for higher thread count sheets just to make sure the bed is as comfortable as it can be. Now, that's why even thrifty hotels might provide some fairly luxurious linen, say 300 or 400 thread count, and then the pricier hotels often wrap their guests in a scandalous 600 thread count sheets, or even higher. Like, you might find some as high as 1,500.
1,500?
Yeah, I can't say I've stayed in that hotel before.
Yeah, I definitely haven't.
Because I count when I'm in there.
But since we're on the topic of bed linens, do you know the housekeeper's secret to casing a pillow?
You mean pulling a pillowcase on a pillow? Uh-huh. I'm sure they do it the same way we all do, right? Like, you tuck it underneath your chin just kind of weirdly, and you have to awkwardly pull the pillowcase up like a sock or a pair of pants, right?
Well, I mean, that works fine for our pillows at home, but imagine trying that same move with pillows from like 20 different strangers each day.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I wouldn't want to put my face anywhere near that many pillows in a day, but yeah, so what do they do?
Basically, they karate chop the middle of the pillow, they fold one side over the other, and then they just shove it into the case and smooth it out afterwards.
That sounds so aggressive, but I kind of like it. I'm going to try that out. Well, you know, it also feels like that would be a time saver because they could do that so quickly. Mm-hmm. And that is something that's critical for housekeepers because they're always pressed for time. Just looking at the stats on this, it's pretty wild. So most hotel maids have just half an hour to devote to cleaning each standard room. A suite might get an hour or so, but they're still having to move super quickly. And what that means is that on a given day, a hotel maid must clean between 10 and 20 rooms in order to meet their daily quota. And because management holds them to a tight schedule, they usually aren't able to clean the rooms as thoroughly as they might like to.
Yeah, I read that some tasks don't get taken care of nearly as often as they'd probably like, including things like vacuuming the room or scrubbing the bathtub. And that's just because there isn't enough time to do these more involved tasks every single day. So they wind up being pushed back to, you know, once a week or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, while we've all heard the horror stories of how bacteria laid in the hotel remote is, or the light switch, or the telephone, it is worth noting that a lot of this contamination is the fallout from these harried schedules that housekeepers have to keep, rather than any kind of laziness or oversight on their part.
Sure.
In fact, I think we talked about this in one of our very first episodes and our invention that we still haven't marketed yet, but it's the the hotel remote condom, right? Where you take the shower cap from a hotel. I still do this. Do you do this in hotel rooms?
No.
Whenever I go into, it's one of my tips, Mango. You should have followed this. But you go in, you find the shower cap, and you put it over the remote. It's just the lifesaver. And then you walk around with it and flip every light switch with it. Something's wrong with me, but that's okay. But I mean, if you think about it, people who clean hotel rooms don't have time to test how clean a surface is, and so instead, they use the same system that we do at home, and that's just to look at it and see if it looks clean. And obviously, this visual assessment leaves a ton of room for error, and that's why, and this stat is a little bit troubling, but it's not uncommon for about 80% of hotel room surfaces to hold at least some amount of fecal bacteria.
80%.
No matter how clean they might look to the naked eye. But the most important thing to remember is to never, ever use the glass cups you find in a hotel room under any circumstances.
So I feel like this is the second time you mentioned this, and I'm really curious what's going on. I mean, is it just that like the house cleaners don't clean them?
Yes, the second time I've mentioned it since we started recording. I was telling Tristan just before we started, but it's the cleaning that's the problem. And so there was an author and a hotel worker named Jacob Tomsky that wrote a hospitality tell-all a few years ago. It was called Heads in Beds. And in the book, Tomsky points out that hotel maids don't actually have dish soap in their housekeeping carts.
Huh.
So as he explained to USA Today, quote, "Some housekeepers will wash the glasses in the sink with hot water and shampoo, but many of them use furniture polish because it leaves the glasses spot-free." How disgusting is that?
I mean, that seems gross, but also maybe a little dangerous, too.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, some housekeepers have even admitted to polishing the glasses with the same cloth that they use to dust the rest of the room. And so while it probably goes without saying, that is a really bad move. Uh-huh. You think about these mops and sponges and dusters that you find in housekeeping carts. They have bacteria counts that are even way worse than the dreaded hotel remote. No number of shower caps can solve this.
Which is pretty foul. I don't want to come down too hard on hotel housekeepers because at the end of the day, they work so hard under really difficult circumstances.
Definitely.
And, I found this study from 2005 where researchers looked at more than 900 Las Vegas housekeepers. And what they found was a mini neck and back pain epidemic. So 47% of the workers studied suffered from some form of severe bodily pain, which really isn't surprising when you consider that those carts that they push up and down the hallway weighs a few hundred pounds when fully loaded with supplies.
Right, and you think about the tasks that they have to do and how repetitive they are, mm-hmm. like lifting the mattress in every single room just to tuck in that bottom sheet. So you would think that that repeated stress has to take its toll over some time.
Which is why it's such an injustice that hotel housekeepers are as underpaid as they are. I mean, the median annual salary for the profession is just under $22,000. And in many places, that's at or below the poverty line for a family of three.
Well, with that in mind, it actually seems like a good time to mention the secret to tipping your hotel housekeeper. And this comes from a few different anonymous maids on Reddit, by the way. It was interesting to read this thread here. But they suggest leaving a dollar or two each day instead of a big tip at the end of your stay. And I'll admit that I'm guilty of this. I usually wait until the end of the stay. So this was interesting. But this actually ensures that every maid who cleans your room gets a tip and not just the last one to do so before you check out. And also, if you have any unopened snacks or drinks that you want to leave behind for the housekeeping crew, those are apparently much appreciated as well. But, you know, some hotels do have pretty strict policies about items left behind in guest rooms. So it is a good idea to leave a little note saying who the money or other goodies are actually meant for.
Which is sound advice. And there's actually something else you can do if you really want to help your housekeeper out, and that's to stop turning down the housekeeping.
And you are telling everything that I am guilty of sometimes. So you mean never skip a day of housekeeping when you're at a hotel? Like, aren't you just making more work for them by opting in for cleaning?
So that's what I was thinking too. But I was reading this article from The Atlantic about how some hotel workers actually dislike their company's sustainability programs because of the negative impact it has on their own workloads. So Starwood Hotels, for instance, has this program where guests can help reduce their carbon footprint by waiving the housekeeping for up to 3 nights. But as it turns out, this was actually a massive headache for the cleaning staff. So listen to this breakdown from the article. Quote, devising a work schedule that had employees cleaning contiguous rooms became impossible with so many guests selecting the green option. This meant that a housekeeper who used to push her cart down a single hallway to clean 15 adjacent rooms now had to move the cumbersome apparatus from floor to floor or even from building to building in order to meet her daily quota of rooms. Moreover, housekeepers now had to clean sometimes filthy rooms that had not been maintained by housekeeping for several days. Most significantly, with fewer hours of work per week, they lost pay in the wake of so many guests electing to make a green choice. So in the end, the new initiative was such a burden that the Hotel Workers Union in Hawaii actually got Starwood to do away with the program in their state.
Hmm. I mean, it does seem like maybe they could have just gotten some of the housekeepers together and come up with some sort of strategy, because it feels like there's got to be a middle ground that still benefits the environment without making life miserable for these employees.
Definitely. Like, think about those little placards that most hotels leave in the bathroom now, like the ones that encourage you to reuse your dirty towels for as long as you can stand it. And that kind of program is great for the environment and the hotel's water bill, but it doesn't increase or decrease a housekeeper's workload in a way that's going to cost them money or discomfort.
I mean, that's true in theory, but how well do those little placards even work? I see them, and I'm curious about that.
So really well, actually. There was a study out of the University of Luxembourg a few years back that found that people tend to use fewer towels when they're told that previous guests in the same room had chosen to reuse their towels.
So were they testing, like, different messages on placards in different rooms or what?
Yeah, so this study used three different messages. So one message just kind of praised the environmental benefits of towel reuse, and another claimed that 75% of guests in this hotel usually use their towels more than once. But the last message, and the most effective by far, claimed that 75% of guests in this room usually use their towels more than once.
So let me make sure I have this straight. The environmental message had very little impact, which is not that big of a surprise, but you're saying that people also didn't care what other guests just generally in the hotel were doing with their towels, but why do they care so much what previous guests in the same room had done with their tells? Like, it just seems like a weird form of peer pressure.
It really is. But the researchers behind the study speculated that the third placard worked so well because it made people feel like they shared something in common with the previous guests. And for some reason, this kinship made them more likely to conform to the social norm of reusing their towels. Like, sharing the same hotel wasn't seen as a rare enough trait to trigger this kind of psychological response in guests. But for whatever reason, sharing the same room was.
Feels like they need to start some sort of like almost the equivalent of an alumni association for people that had stayed in that. I'm going to try it out the next time I stay in a hotel, see what kind of momentum I can get. But it is interesting to see where people draw the line on this kind of thing. But all right, now that we've covered some of housekeeping's secrets, I feel like we should shine the spotlight on another member of the hotel staff that we ask way too much of, and that's the concierge. First, let's take a quick break.
So you're listening to Part-Time Genius, and we're talking about the little-known secrets of the hotel concierge. So, Will, I don't know about you, but concierge service is probably my favorite of all the hotel amenities I never actually use. And most of the hotels I stay at don't even offer it, but I just love the idea of being assigned my own personal fixer, like someone to help find a replacement shirt for the one I spilled spaghetti on. It's always spaghetti, I don't know why, or to score that hard-to-get dinner reservation at the last possible minute.
I'm not sure a concierge would appreciate being called your personal fixer, but I do agree that concierge service is this pretty amazing thing. And it feels a little bit old-fashioned because, you know, you think these days a lot of people just use their smartphones to do the same kind of stuff if you're looking for a restaurant, if you're just looking for tips in the city or something like that. But this idea of a dedicated concierge, it feels a little more quaint maybe now than it used to, but that's also kind of what I like about it.
Yeah, so maybe a fixer wasn't a great word for it. How about an on-site hotel genie?
I mean, I feel like that makes less sense than the first one. What do you mean?
So, I don't know. Think about it. Like a concierge is like a mysterious, seldom seen service. Most people don't understand it. They pull off these bizarre, almost impossible requests like magic, and they do wear these cryptic symbols around their necks to signify the international secret society that they belong to.
Wait, what was that last part that you said? Did you just slip that in because you thought I was paying attention? A secret society?
No, it's a real thing. So the group is called the Le Clef d'Or, and I guess that means the Golden Keys. And it's essentially this international network of hotel concierges. It dates back to the early 20th century France. And the group's members are easy to spot because they all wear these golden cross keys on their lapels. Today, the group has roughly 4,000 members spread across 80 different countries and over 500 travel destinations. And the group's official website touts, the Golden Keys are in, quote, literally every corner of the world.
I mean, I'll be honest, I thought this was going to get less creepy after the explanation, but that doesn't seem to be the case. But there is something sort of endearing about there being this global brotherhood of concierges who all have each other's backs, I guess.
Yeah, and a big part of the group's appeal is that all the members share their connections with one another. So if one member has an especially tough guest request, chances are that they can get in touch with a fellow member for a hookup. And it's those connections that really allow concierges to pull off some of the great requests that they get. So I was reading about this one concierge who's worked in upscale hotels all over the world. His name is Burak Epeki. And when he used to work in a hotel in New York, a guest once asked him to track down this super specific barbecue sauce that was made in small batches down in Louisiana. And that probably would have been a tough enough request on its own, but sourcing the sauce was actually the easy part. So the guest simply didn't want the sauce shipped to him in New York. Instead, he wanted it overnighted to his island home in the Caribbean, nearly 2,000 miles away. And he didn't just want a bottle. Like, he wanted enough barbecue sauce for an entire garden party, which he was apparently going to host the next day or something.
I mean, this sounds like your normal run-of-the-mill request to me, even if it has nothing to do with the city that he was in. That is so bizarre. I mean, seriously, though, was Epeki able to pull this off?
Yeah, I mean, thanks to that network. And actually, in case you weren't already convinced about the power of Golden Keys, there's this other story I wanted to share. And this one comes from Sandra Newman, and she's the chief concierge at the Emirates Palace in Abu Dhabi. And during her tenure there, she's helped with a ton of marriage proposals and weddings. But there's one wedding in particular that I'm guessing she'll never forget, even if she wants to. And that's because she was once approached by a couple who wanted her help planning a wedding for two of their teddy bears.
Seriously? Like, this sounds less like the work of a genie and more just like enabling people asking for ridiculous things.
So I agree. I'm not sure that teddy bear weddings are the kind of thing you want to encourage on hotel property, at least. But at any rate, it did really happen.
Wow.
And while I doubt Newman had to call in any favors with the Golden Keys to make it happen, she did throw a pretty stellar wedding. Apparently, there were 25 other teddy bears in attendance that day, each of which was seated with a placard. They provided fresh slices of wedding pizza to enjoy during the reception to each of these teddy bears. And Newman actually described the scene in this interview with The National. She says, quote, "There was pizza laid out on a table for every teddy bear at the respective place with a side plate and slices of pizza for the celebration. This was a serious affair."
I mean, it definitely sounds like some kind of affair. I'm not sure if serious is the word I'd use, but that is a weird but great story. Actually, in that same bizarre vein, I found this great story about a hotel staff in Utah that started fielding these really odd requests from an extremely bored traveling businessman. Now, this guy's name is Sean Fitzsimmons, and for the better part of 6 years or so, he'd been traveling from Denver to Salt Lake City every other week. Now, somewhere in that cycle, Sean decided to make a decidedly weird request when he was booking his room online. So here's what he asked. He asked the staff to, quote, "draw a picture of what you think I look like and place it on my bed."
And you thought the Golden Keys were creepy.
I know, this one's weird. But in his defense, Sean seems to have known he did a pretty weird thing. So he later said, quote, "When I checked in, the lady at the front desk looked at me so weird and it got so awkward. And I was like, I can't ever come back here again." But he did come back. And as it turned out, the amazing staff at this hotel decided to go along with his request. And after that, the floodgates were open. Sean continued making these occasional oddball requests during his frequent trips. And the hotel staff has been game to try to pull these things off at every turn. So just listen to some of the things that Sean has requested to have put on his bed. And keep in mind that you can go online and actually see what the hotel came up with for each part of these. So one, a fort built out of pillows. A picture of a dog dressed as a boat captain. A printed photo of Grandma Winslow from Family Matters. And then, of course, maybe my favorite, pictures of Alfonso Ribeiro and Jeremy Jackson arranged so that they appear to be looking at each other.
So that's Carlton from The Fresh Prince, and is that one of the dudes from Baywatch?
Yes, so I guess Sean is maybe a little bit stuck in the 90s, but it's still nice to see that the staff is playing along with him, don't you think?
I mean, I don't know if you knew this or not, but it's kind of an open secret that hotel staff can be pretty accommodating.
I think so. Well, in fact, I think the teddy bear wedding in Abu Dhabi was pretty solid proof of that. But I know there are a ton of great hotel facts that we haven't gotten to yet. So what do you say we share a few more of our favorites in today's Fact Off?
Count me in. Management at Happy Guest Hotel in the UK has a unique way to make their guests feel less lonely, and that's by providing them with a roommate during stays, and that roommate is a goldfish named Happy. So according to the hotel's website, you can book Happy or a Happy stand-in ahead of time so that he's waiting in your room upon arrival. And you might be wondering, like, why a goldfish? According to Listverse, the hotel's owner believes, quote, that this little fish provides a sense of comfort, a sounding board, and unconditional love to the guest after a hard day.
Wow. All right, well, here's one thing I was surprised by. It's not uncommon for business travelers to be so lonely that they ask the room service waiters to come in and eat with them. According to our friends at Mental Floss, who talked with an industry vet at a high-end hotel in San Francisco, it happens more often than you'd think. So Matt once sat down to eat with Oprah Winfrey, who was eating by herself despite her suite being filled with her own employees. And at one time, he had a bite with JFK Jr., who wanted him to join as he watched Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Not a bad gig.
So one of the world's smallest hotels is in Amberg, Germany, and it has this fascinating origin story. So according to Unique Hotels, the property was built in 1728. And this is when German couples who wanted to get married actually had to own property. So someone built a tiny house in this 8-foot gap between two buildings and dubbed it the marriage house. Basically, you bought the keys from a friend, you owned the house till you were married, and then you sold it to the next couple. And today it's more of a traditional hotel, so you don't have to get married to stay there.
Interesting. All right, well, are you familiar with the Luxor Hotel in Las Vegas? It's that, you know, that pyramid that kind of shoots down that beam of light into the air there.
Yeah.
Now, apparently the light beam is so strong that it's generated its own ecosystem on the Vegas Strip there. You think about the bugs and the moths that are attracted to that kind of light, and it's so tremendous that they make pilgrimages to it. And then bats and even hunting birds will swoop in and travel from as far as 20 miles away to feast on this insect buffet that's there. And according to the San Francisco Gate, people who aren't paying too much attention, they actually think that the hotel is pumping glitter into the air because it's a lot of like shining light reflecting off of these insects. So they don't realize it's just a bunch of bugs getting eaten by bats.
I love that the best buffet on the Vegas Strip is an insect buffet.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
So in 2011, Time Magazine reported that hotels in Hawaii started using these high-tech towels with microchips in them. And the system helped the hotel monitor their linen so they knew when to replace towels. But more importantly, it actually helped them keep track of towel thieves. So according to one hotel, they saved over $15,000 in stolen towels that year thanks to the chips, which I guess makes sense, especially at a hotel where people might take the towels to the beach.
So according to Colin Powell's biography, when Mikhail Gorbachev came to negotiate with Reagan and a Russian delegation stayed at the Madison Hotel, the minibar got an extreme workout. The Russians were apparently enamored with this magically stocked fridge and spent about $3,000 a night adjusting for inflation just at these minibars. And so the bill was getting so high that the head of the mission had to ask hotel management to replace the alcohol with soda.
I mean, it is minibar prices, so I don't know if that's like 5 bottles or 1,000 bottles.
Pack of nuts.
But Atlas Obscura writes that the oldest hotel in the world, which is also centered on a spa, was started in 705 CE by an emperor's aide at the time. Hmm. And it's actually been run by the same family for over 52 different generations of descendants.
No way.
Isn't that unreal?
That is a really interesting stat. All right, well, here's a sweet one. A guy named Sean Siepler was a tech exec, and he was doing a lot of traveling when he realized that he barely used the bar of soap that his hotel had provided. So he called down and asked what happened to the soap. And of course, it was just being thrown away. At the same time, he learned that 1.4 million kids die each year from pneumonia or cholera and all the diseases that could be prevented with better access to hygiene. So he decided to combine these concepts and created Clean the World. Now, this is a nonprofit that collects soaps from hotels, sanitizes and melts them down, repackages them, and then sends them to struggling communities. And they do this on a pretty massive scale. So, for example, the 9,000-room Sands Hotel in Macau is one of the hotels that participates in the program. And as a result, Clean the World collects over 700 metric tons of waste and converts it into 12 million bars of soap that get distributed to kids in 67 different countries.
And that's pretty amazing. 12 million bars of soap.
Yeah.
I mean, I just assumed you were talking about like little boutique hotels, but, you know, that is amazing. And I think you deserve the prize for that one. And also, maybe that gives us a little more insight into what Tristan's doing over there with those tiny soaps and shampoos.
Yeah, he probably has about as much as Clean the World. That's impressive. But thanks so much. And thanks to you guys for listening. If you have any great facts you'd like to share or any fun stories you'd like to share about your stay in hotels, we, of course, love to hear those from you. You can email us, parttimegenius@howstuffworks.com. Or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. But as always, thanks so much for listening. Thanks again for listening. Part-Time Genius is a production of How Stuff Works and wouldn't be possible without several brilliant people who do the important things we couldn't even begin to understand.
Tristan McNeil does the editing thing.
Noel Brown made the theme song and does the mixy-mixy sound thing.
Jerry Rowland does the exec producer thing.
Gabe Luzier is our lead researcher with support from the research army, including Austin Thompson, Nolan Brown, and Lucas Adams.
And Eves Jeffcoat gets the show to your ears. Good job, Eves.
If you like what you heard, we hope you'll subscribe. And if you really, really like what you've heard, maybe you could leave a good review for us.
Did we forget Jason?
Jason who?